Fandom. With your host, Jesse Lawson. Welcome back, Wrestling Fandom Podcast listeners. I'm back again with yet another special guest to share his wrestling fandom story. Mark Mayhew, good friend of mine. How you doing, good sir?
What up, bro?
Doing pretty good, you know. We got off of work, now we're here shooting a podcast.
I'm all about it, bro. I'm all about it.
Heck yeah. So, of course, like we always start in this podcast, how'd your wrestling fandom start?
Well, my wrestling fandom started, first memory I have of ever watching professional wrestling was, it was an old black and white. It was with my grandma, and it was Gorgeous George. I don't know who he was wrestling. I was 2 or 3 years old at the time. But my grandma was telling me, yeah, you know, this is who I watched when I was a kid, and it was the craziest thing I'd ever seen. It was two grown men picking each other up, slamming each other, hitting each other, and I was like, I'm addicted. And I mean, the most relevant opinion or memory I can say now of like my first official fandom on myself was like, I'd have to say Razor versus Shawn, WrestleMania 10. Like, I just, oh my God. There was nothing like it. I mean, Razor was kind of, you know, my hero back then because he was just cool, that machismo. And
that machismo, that oozing machismo.
I wanted to be him, bro, because, I mean, he had the chains, he had the girls, you know, the way he talked. Still, to this day, I'll walk around with a toothpick in my mouth and just be like, hey, yo.
Oh, I miss those days. WrestleMania 10, that was one of my first, well, I shouldn't say one of my first pay-per-views, but... man, that is one of my, that's the one where the bug definitely sank in for me.
Oh, I mean, how could it not, bro? Like,
well, my two favorite wrestlers opened up the pay-per-view to probably the best match of the year. I don't care what Dave Meltzer's fan polls or anything else says, but, or even what 90% of people say is the best match on that show. Right. I'm a Bret and Owen fan. That was the best match on that show. Most people like the Bret or the Razor Shawn ladder match. I don't discredit that match at all.
Right.
That is, you know, I may be a Bret Hart fan. We all know the ladder match bull crap between those two. Right. But, you know, like, WrestleMania 10 was such an awesome thing to me. Like,
well, and to be honest, man, you know, you brought up Meltzer and, I'm just going to jump right in with this one, bro. Like, I can't stand Dave Meltzer, bro. Like, he's one of those people that's taken away the ability to be a wrestling fan because it's just like every time you see Dave Meltzer with his stars and all of his stars, you know, people are so – they're not caught up in the moment. They're caught up in Dave Meltzer's stars, and I can't stand that. And
I get that. I totally – especially in the last, you know, the big New Japan boom in the last few years. Yeah. At first, it was the rumblings of New Japan,
right.
Kenny Omega, and Kota Ibushi, and Okada, and Tanahashi, and these guys are straight up taking a verge of death New Japan and making it great again, and coming back, and it's just like, man, and then once Dave Meltzer started with his star system, that's kind of, you know, Kenny Omega and Okada, 6 stars. I was like, you can't do 6 stars.
Right. Like, that's like people saying 110%. There's no such thing as 110%.
Exactly.
100% is maximum capacity. But it's just like Dave Meltzer, and it's just like he's bred this new era of fan. And I read a meme this morning, and I wanted to share this, because it just 110% made sense to me. And it shows the infamous Undertaker, Mankind, Hell in a Cell, right?
Yeah.
And it says on the top, 1998 fans, 97 fans, you know, Undertaker is a murderer. He just killed Mankind. And then it says, you know, wrestling fans in 2019, you know, Mick just took a massive bump to put over Mark so that way Mark could get a massive push. And I'm like, you know, that is the problem now. And it's so hard for us as wrestling fans to enjoy wrestling. It's like we're the only unique fandom that it seems like, you know, you don't see Marvel fans go into the movies and going to see Endgame and being like,
and well, rewriting the whole thing,
right? Yeah. Exactly. Or even just being like, you know, Josh Brolin is Thanos. You know, he, you know, the way that Josh Brolin did this and this, it's like, no, they just say Thanos and the plot of the movie, and it's, we're just such a unique fandom that is just so critical, and I take a lot of pride in the fact that when I watch a wrestling show, I like to suspend disbelief, and I just enjoy it, and I put myself into that moment and into that time, whether it be a local small indie show, or it's, you know, watching WrestleMania or Wrestle Kingdom or any of these big events. It's just, I suspend the disbelief and I put myself in that immersion, and I'm able to enjoy it. And it doesn't matter if it's AEW, it doesn't matter if it's New Japan, ROH, CZW, WWE. I just put myself in that fandom for a moment, and I just enjoy what those workers are sacrificing their bodies for, rather than critiquing them. I enjoy it. And I apologize for ranting, bro.
You're perfectly good, sir. That's what we're here for. Right. I want to hear your wrestling stories, your point of views on wrestling, because me, I don't care. I love everybody's point of view. I respect everybody's right. point of view. I may be personally more of a Jim Cornette kind of guy than right. a Vince Russo, Young Bucks type of guy.
Right.
But, you know, I don't discriminate and I don't hate on people's wrestling views, so I love hearing the rants.
You asked where my fandom really started. This just popped into my head. I mean, you've heard me tell the story 1,000 times, but I feel like other viewers can appreciate it. The real spot that my sincere fandom, like diehard loyal wrestling fandom.
So the day the bug bit.
Right.
Or not bit, but dug in like a tick.
Right, right. I was in middle school, my first year of middle school, out in Worley, Idaho, at Lakeside Middle School, and they had a special assembly that day, and Roddy Piper came to our school, and he did one of those anti-drug speeches, and, you know, it was cool, but I was just starstruck that there's Roddy Piper right there in front of me, and I was that little white boy on the reservation that got my ass whooped every day, and I ain't scared to say it, I actually take a lot of pride in that, but, you know, after the assembly, we're all going through the halls, and next thing you know, my head's slammed into a locker. I'm getting thrown on the floor and stomped on. And as I'm curled up in fetal position trying to protect myself, I hear this familiar voice. You better get the hell off of him. That was Roddy Piper, bro. And he pulled this kid off me and, like, chucked him probably, like, 4 feet back. You know, he's big-ass Roddy Piper.
Yeah.
He just scared those kids full gimmicked out. And then he helped me to my feet, man. He was like, hey, I'm here for the rest of the day. Can I just come hang out with you in your class and at your lunch and stuff? And, bro, Roddy Piper sat with me all day in class. He sat with me, and he gave me and my little group of nerdy friends that got picked on. You know, he was not only our enforcer for the day, where nobody wanted to come up and pick on us because there's Roddy Piper, but he gave us tickets, and he just gave us this whole speech about being a man and about being the smaller dog in the fight. And even when you get beat up, as long as you're getting back to your feet, that makes you such a real man. And then, you know, when I got older and I learned about how in the business he was one of the smaller guys,
yeah,
it was just, I look back on that moment, and he gave us all free tickets for us and our families that night to that show, and I watched him wrestle some Gold Dust knockoff, you know, and but it was just, you know, he took the time as he came out to the ring to walk over to our little section right along the gate and high five all of us. And it was in that moment, bro, the larger than life, that Superman moment, where it was like, here's a real hero right in front of me, like somebody I can look up to. And a lot of people are like, well, how can you look up to Roddy Piper? He was such a heel. Well, you know, maybe sometimes in life it's the bad guy that has to do the right thing to inspire a younger generation.
Exactly. Exactly. Roddy Piper, you know, he was one of the greatest. His story is legendary, you know, being that kid picked on,
right.
you know, some of his stories have been proven wrong, you know,
right.
His running away at 14 and all that, but you know what? It doesn't matter. Roddy Piper was a great, one of the GOATs, because you can't just have one GOAT. There is no such thing as the greatest of all time. There are greatests of all time.
I mean,
and he was definitely one of them.
As controversial as it might be, if I was to say one of the, in my opinion, the GOAT as far as technical wrestling is concerned, it's always going to be Chris Benoit. You know, despite the controversy behind his name, I'm not afraid to say his name out loud. He kind of reminds me of like an advanced Bret Hart, and I think you know what I mean by that. It was it had nothing to do with there being a lack on Bret's end, but just the era that Benoit was in. He brought that kind of technical wrestling that Bret Hart had, just amplified up in those.
He was
shots.
A step above, just like Owen was.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, okay, and you know, you were talking about Benoit. You know, Benoit, a lot of people don't like talking about him. I love Benoit. I can, but hopefully most wrestling fans, I can separate the personal, the evil things he did at the end of his life, and the professional world, and you know, the guys like Benoit and Eddie and Dean, man, those guys in the early 90s, for not early 90s but mid 90s, you know, those were the guys that, I hate to say it, made me tune into WCW.
Right.
You know,
right,
like, those were the guys towards the end of WCW, that 99. Yeah, I was a Bret Hart fan, but Bret Hart was so...
I like to use the word tired.
Yeah. Like, you could tell it in his style when he got to WCW. Even as a 7-8-year-old kid, 9-year-old kid,
right,
you could tell in his style that he wasn't happy. He didn't want to be there. So Benoit was the guy I went to myself. And I completely understand what you're talking about. He was, like I was saying, he was a step above Bret in the technical realm. And
the best wrestling moment in my entire life, and I mean, there's been a lot of them. I've had personal experiences that were amazing. But my favorite moment in professional wrestling was when Chris Benoit at WrestleMania 20 won the belt. As soon as Eddie got in the ring, I don't remember a lot of times in life where wrestling made me cry, and especially in a good way. Yeah. But to see two best friends in the ring celebrating finally having climbed the mountain on both their respective brands, I always wanted in life to have, you know, a road dog that I traveled up and down the road with. And, you know, in my personal life, I have Daniel Rivita. You know Dan just as well as I do.
We've had
our moments like that, but that's just kind of the plateau, in my opinion, of friendship right there, is when your brother, somebody you've shed blood, had your blood shed by, and when you are able to celebrate all of those ups and downs, those bumps in the road that I don't know if I'm ever going to make it, maybe I will one day, and to see both of them celebrating at the same time, like, that's just... We all have that WrestleMania moment that means the most to us, and that's it for me right there. Like, there's nothing, I mean, as big of a Brock Lesnar mark as I am, you know, when he beat the streak, I love that, but it didn't gain the same kind of emotional response for me. It was shock, and it was exciting, but that moment with Eddie and Benoit, like, despite what happened at both the end of their lives, you know, that doesn't matter to me, and I'm able to, like you were saying, separate the fandom from the personal beliefs and the personal ideologies that I hold. Like, do I like the fact he murdered his family and himself? No. Do I like the fact that Eddie died due to years of drug use? No, not at all. But in that moment, as a wrestling fan, to see two of the men that I grew up watching reach that plateau, it was just... And I've seen them try to replicate it. You know, Benoit with the, you know... It was Daniel Bryan with Batista and Orton, but it just didn't feel organic. It felt like, hey, we're trying to rewrite this moment so we could have the Benoit
10 years later,
back.
Yeah.
But just nothing will ever top that moment when Benoit climbed, and it means the world to me still to this day.
All right. Well, since you're bringing up wrestling moments that have personally touched you, you got any others? You know, because I love hearing how pro wrestling has personally touched or inspired people in everyday life. And,
right,
you know, you brought up Eddie and Chris's relationship and making it to the mountaintop. And
right,
you and Dan have had that, you know, yourself respectively. You know, are there any other, you know, anything, relationships in wrestling like that, or a match or a story or a character that has inspired, give you know, that personal touch?
The best personal touch for me, like genuinely personal, you know, my dear friend Chief Atakulakula. I met him because of a mutual artist we know by the name of Knothead. You know Knothead.
Yeah.
And he had reached out to me and he was like, hey man, I heard your music that you make and it's, you know, incredible and I appreciate it. And he's like, will you make me a theme song? And I'm like, you know, yeah. And, you know, and as a struggling young artist, when you have somebody, you know, that's a pro wrestler, you love pro wrestling, and they reach out, that's amazing. But when he fully explained to me what the scope of what was happening when it happened, I had made him a new theme song. He loves it, you know, and I love it, and we're happy about it. And then he sends me a video a couple weeks later of him in Puerto Rico having a main event match against Savio Vega, and he's coming out to my music, and that venue had 3,000 people in that venue. And I see people all across this crowd jamming out to my music. Like, that was a moment for me that I felt like I really contributed. And then just the years of managing Dan, you know, from backyard wrestling to getting into a ring to him winning the heavyweight championship in our local wrestling company, you know, it just these little moments for me. And on a big scale, I mean, there's been all sorts of just moments that have touched my life. One of my all-time favorites is, I believe it was 2003, Kane made his return with the half mask for the first time.
Okay.
And I'm a diehard patriot, as you know. I love my country. I love my flag.
Okay.
And when I seen the Un-Americans, Test, Christian, Lance Storm come out to the ring, they're about to burn the American flag. That was 2003, so I was, I believe, either 13 or 14 years old. You know, I'm hitting that testosterone levels are going up, everything's spiking. So when I'm watching wrestling, I'm getting more amped than I've ever been. And I see these guys about to burn the American flag. And, like, legitimately, I'm getting frustrated because it was still that fine line between kayfabe and reality for me where I'm like, well, I don't know, man. Like, are they really going to do that? And then there hits Goldust and Booker T. You know, they hit the ring and they're fighting for America. And I'm, you know, I'm just cheering and screaming. And I'm like, you know, get them. And then they're getting outnumbered. And oh my God, Test gets in the ring with that flag, lights out blowtorch. And I just feel my heart pumping in my chest. And all of a sudden, Kane's music hits. And when he came out, you know, us fans at that point, we hadn't seen much of Kane's face at all. So to see him in a half mask coming back was already enough of a shock. But to see him come down and hit some of the stiffest punches I've seen him do, and those choke slams are beautiful, and then he's waving that flag after he saves our flag. I mean, that touched me. You know, and on that patriotic stuff, man, the first SmackDown after 9/11.
Yes, I remember that one.
The speech that Vince McMahon, I don't give a fuck what anybody says about Vince McMahon. I love that man. You know, he might be out of touch at this point, but the things he's contributed to my life, I'm forever grateful. And so I remember when 9/11 happened, man, I was just a little kid. And that was scary to me, you know, and I was scared. Yeah. I was scared, bro. Like, I felt
it. I feel you, brother. I was same age, you know.
And
little kids watching, you know,
our country be attacked.
Well, not just that, watching what we knew about the world change right in front of our eyes before we even went to school that day. I feel you on that, brother.
And right. That speech Vince McMahon gave, that SmackDown about we will not be afraid, we're gonna continue to live our lives, I've applied that to my whole life since then. You know, there's times in life where you get down, you get scared, you get hurt, you know, things happen, but when you refuse to surrender, you refuse to give your enemy the ability to control you, like, I have lived my life by those words in that moment. And it's, you know, there's just a plethora. I mean, we'd have to have like an 8-hour podcast for me to be able to go over all the moments, bro. But I mean, it's just professional wrestling as a whole, it's been a medium for me my whole life. I mean, you've known me, bro, since I was about 17-18 years old. I mean, when we were doing the yarder stuff together back in the day. You know, this has just been a medium for me to express myself and to live who I want to be at times when I don't feel like I can be that person, and at the same time help me evolve as a person, you know. Good old friend of ours, the wrestler Burbs, you know, Burbs.
Good old Lauren.
Me and him, we were living together, and, you know, it was back just in those yard tartar days, and we had a moment where he was getting ready to drop me off at high school, bro, and we had the garbage man stop and be like, aren't you those wrestling cats? Yeah, man, we are. What's up? Oh, my son loves watching you guys every week. Can I get your autographs real quick? And there, man, I'm going to high school. And I have a guy stopping to ask me for my autograph for his son. Like, that just gave me a perspective switch that just, you know, wrestling as a whole has just changed my life. And it's, you know, some people it's MMA. Some people it's, you know, the arts. But for me, bro, it's wrestling. Like, my soul bleeds professional wrestling.
Hell yeah. See, that's the kind of stuff I love to hear, and I completely get what you mean by, you know, if we want to talk about all the inspirational things I've seen growing up in wrestling and personally have felt, man, we could be here for days.
Yes.
I totally understand that. But, you know, hey, you gave us a few examples.
Yeah.
Some of the ones that are really big to you.
Yeah.
And that alone, I know the listeners and myself appreciate it because, you know, that's what we want to hear. Once again, you know, this is a podcast that isn't like any of the other wrestling podcasts. You know, I'm not Conrad, he's not Bruce Pritchard, Eric Bischoff, Tony Schiavone. You know, this isn't about the biz, quote unquote. This is about us wrestling fans and telling all the other wrestling fans and everybody else who, you know, them closet wrestling fans and them naysayers and haters. You know, we're teaching them what pro wrestling has done and can do for people's lives. And, you know, them stories I absolutely love. So, again, thank you for sharing them stories, Mark.
Lord. Do you mind if I share one more thing about this before we switch subject?
I'm totally down, brother. The floor is all yours.
This is actually my kid, bro. So, you know, my kid, she a couple years ago went through a very traumatic experience. I'm not going to share that on the podcast right now. But she had to find strength in something. And she had to find something to look up to and to believe in. And just like me as a kid, professional wrestling, it became something she could look up to. And if there was anybody from the WWE that I could ever just give the utmost thanks to, it's the man, Becky Lynch. When she was still the Irish last kicker.
Yeah.
You know, she was on her climb up.
The steampunk.
Right. My kid latched onto her as a role model for somebody to look to be tough. You know, I mean, she's the Irish last kicker. She's this alpha female. And my daughter needed that. And she needed somebody to inspire her that no matter what had happened to her in her life, that, you know, to be strong, to persevere. And I took my daughter to her first WWE event, which she had never even seen the inside of an arena. She had seen a couple indie shows, you know, on the inside.
Yeah.
She'd run up with the backyard wrestling. But she sees the inside of an arena. And, you know, we're over there by the entrance. Becky Lynch comes out for her match, and everybody else around us is screaming and cheering, and I see my kid, she's leaning in with her hand on her chin, and she's really focused, and I look at her and go, you know, are you having fun? And she goes, Dad, she's a real person. She's right there in front of me. And it was not her being upset or anything, it was just such a moment for her to absorb that the character she saw on TV was right there in front of her. And as she's walking by us, she looks at my kid and gives her two thumbs up. And my kid, she just felt it. And then, you know, we get home that night, you know, we're finally getting ready for bed and everything. And my kid looks at me and she goes, Dad, I want to be strong like Becky Lynch. And since that day, that woman has, you know, I'm defensive about her. When I see, you know, these online marks that are, oh, she's so hot, she's so sexy, I'm like, yeah, but more than that, she's a role model. She's a genuine female wrestler that is tough, that is, though she's attractive, she doesn't try to be sexy. And it's one of those things where as a man that has a daughter, you couldn't ask for a better role model than that right there. So, you know, if on the off chance anybody who knows Becky Lynch is listening, please just pass along my thank you to that woman because she has helped my daughter through a very dark time in her life, and it doesn't get any better than that.
Straight up, no, it doesn't. You know, I'm sure, you know, Becky probably won't hear this, but, you know, that's the kind of things that makes them continue on working 250 days a year.
Exactly.
You know, 2 days off a week, just like everybody else, but they have to fly all the way back home, you know.
Exactly.
You know, those are the kind of stories that makes them keep going. So, you know, if for some by miracle she does hear this little clip, you know, I'm pretty sure she would say no. The thank you is all mine.
Right.
You
know? Right. She seems like that kind of class act.
Straight up. A lot of them do, you know, because pro wrestlers are, you know, they're meant to treat you bad, but yeah. Got a couple stories from a couple of people that'll come up in future episodes, and one of them, you know, totally understand what I mean by that.
You know who is ironically one of the nicest wrestlers that I have ever met in my entire life? Brock Lesnar. And, you know, a lot of people ask me all the time, why are you such a big Brock Lesnar, Mark? And I'm like, well, when you're a young kid, and you happen to wind up in the wrong parking lot on a family vacation, and you happen to see all the people you look up to coming in, when a man like Brock Lesnar gets out, and not only does he shake your hand and he's happy to be there to see you, but he picks you up, and I mean, he picked me up with one hand, set me on his shoulder, and he tells his manager, Paul Heyman, hey, will you get a picture of me and this kid? Paul gets the picture. Nothing like that is ever going to be able to get taken away from you.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You know, another... I haven't really done this on any of my other episodes, but, you know, you're a connoisseur of wrestling.
I am.
Who were some of the... we were talking about them earlier. Who were some of the underrated wrestlers that you had very much appreciation for? Like we were talking earlier about good old pat yourself on the back.
Barry Horowitz, man.
Barry Horowitz.
Oh, man. So some of the underappreciated, like, people that I would consider just amazing.
Yeah, some of the people, us wrestling fandom, people would know, but the other mainstream wrestling fans would just be like, who's this guy getting destroyed in 2 minutes?
Man. Well, of course, Barry Horowitz, you know, like that's where the conversation came up earlier, but Barry Horowitz, man, after watching the documentary I did about him, the guy was just amazing. But I mean, some of the guys that could put over other people and like just, God, there's a plethora of them, but Rico? Do you remember Rico?
Oh, I absolutely love Rico.
The way
Rico Constantino.
The way he presented his character was just amazing. And you know, you when you're younger and you're a male and you see this flamboyant, you know, kind of metrosexual guy, you know, and you're like, I don't like that. That was exactly what he was trying to inspire.
Exactly.
Scotty Too Hotty, Grandmaster Sexy. I mean, I know they were tag team champions, but respectively, each of them in their solo careers, I felt like they put over people a lot. One of my all-time favorites, one of my number ones, he belongs on his own Mount Rushmore, Spike Dudley. Spike Dudley, the way that that man worked, I remember being a kid, and whenever they would say 150 pounds, as I
soaking
got,
wet.
As I got gradually older and I started hitting closer to that 150-pound mark, I'm like, oh my God, I could do that. I could do that. And the way he would get thrown, like, from the ring over the barricade. And I remember it was in ECW when they caught him. And they started just crowd surfing him around the arena.
Yep, when Bam Bam threw him into, the third or fourth row.
Yeah. I'd never seen anything like that. And, I mean, you know, there's a plethora of artists. And I call them artists because that's really what it is. It's an art, and it's a very painful art. But, you know, I call them artists. For various reasons, you know, there's the artists that are the technical artists, the hardcore artists, but there is an art form to being able to put over other people. The Blue Meanie, he's another one, man. Stevie Richards, the BWO, like, it's just
Nova never got his shot. They slapped that stupid Simon Dean gimmick on him, and that just totally killed Nova, because fans, if you've never seen Nova... And I'm not talking about Simon Dean, but if you've never seen Nova from ECW, please go back and check him out.
Nova was amazing.
You think the things Bucks do and Kenny Omega and Zack Sabre Jr. Right. and Ricochet, this guy was inventing those moves.
Right. It was my ECW Mount Rushmore of innovative moves, easily Sabu, Rob Van Dam, Jerry Lynn, and Nova. Like,
straight up.
As Randy Orton would call it, flippy shit. That was the original flippy shit that didn't look choreographed because nobody knew how to take those moves. And that was the thing that I liked was, you know, they hit like a crazy variant of a Hurricane Rana. The opponent didn't know how to take it, so it looked so organic. And it just looked like, oh my God, he just actually flipped that guy and might have hurt him. You know?
Momentum actually took him over, not just he flipped himself.
Right. Yeah. And there's something to be said about that, man. And it's but just a lot of the put themselves over guys, you know, I'm going to throw a shout out for myself in that regards. I mean, you know, the booker, and you know exactly who that is, the company we both work for, Anytime it was, hey, make this guy look good. If you can't enjoy getting your ass kicked so you can make a star, you have no business in this business. And I took a lot of pride in a lot of the early days of being able to go out with somebody that maybe just didn't have a lot of skill, but being able to say, hey, try this on me. You know, try this thing with the audience. And it's something that I feel comes organic, is the ability to be like, I know I'm going to lose tonight, so let's make a fucking star out of me losing. Let's make this guy that's going to beat me, rather than be selfish and be like, hey, you know, I'm going to be mad that I'm going to have to lose tonight, or, you know, I know this guy's going to kick my ass. Instead of having that attitude, it was always the mentality of, all right, if you're going to beat me, I want that to mean something. So I'm going to make you A, earn it, and B, you're going to look so fucking good when I'm screaming in fucking pain when you're beating my ass. Like, God, I miss doing it. You know, if I didn't have the arthritis and the pain from being a youngster, not knowing what I was doing proper and getting my ass beat, I would make a whole career out of being a Barry Horowitz. Like, there is just something to be said about that.
Straight up, to be able to, you know, especially when we were kids, you know, growing up with what they called squash matches on TV each and every week, you know. The guys like Barry Horowitz and Dwayne Gill or Gilbert, you know, Louis Spicoli when he was younger,
right.
You know, these guys that eventually became stars or were just enhancement talent, as they're called nowadays, you know, those guys are the ones that truly made us fall in love with, you know, the Bret Harts, the Randy Savages, the, and fear the guys like Yokozuna. And, well, I've seen Yokozuna pop a few jobbers' heads off.
When you see a guy that looks like your buff Uncle Roger getting his ass whipped by a dude that is just folding him into a pretzel, you just, as a fan, especially as a kid, which I can't stress enough how important it is for the kids to believe, because this is something that helps them through their whole life. But when you see, as a kid, that dude that's big and jacked and buff like you want to be, still getting beat up by a you know, a Diesel or a Razor Ramon or a Bret Hart, you're just like, holy crap, that's a pretty big dude. And, you know, especially as children, we didn't have the knowledge and understanding that,
of course,
working. You know, we had that looks like, if that was at a what we perceived as a kid as a barroom brawl.
Brawl, yeah.
You know, like, you would be intimidated.
Yeah.
Like the King Kong Bundys, man.
Oh, God. I'm sorry. Well, thinking about it, King Kong Bundy, LJN, man, that thing would, you could kill your brother or sister with that thing.
Yeah.
Just how fat that thing is, speaking of which, you know, I have to ask, you know, you grew up in the Attitude Era when merchandising, whether it was WCW, ECW, or, of course, WWF, merchandising was everywhere. Kmart, yes. Walmart, JCPenney's, the pop-up shops at your local street fair things like we have this weekend, Pig Out in the Park, or your county fairgrounds during the fair, you know. We had merchandising at the fingertips, from top hats to yo-yos to everything you could imagine. Thunder mixers. Poor Hulk Hogan, he should have went with the George Foreman grill.
Oh, absolutely.
But, you know, I just have to ask, did you grow up, you know, collecting action figures, posters, merchandise, anything? Did you have a wrestling collection growing up?
See, when I was a kid, I was really poor. So I wasn't able to get a lot of the, like, what I call first-hand merchandise, which is like, oh, I'm at the show, or I'm at this, or I'm at that. But a lot of times at thrift stores, if I saw a cool wrestling shirt, but I had a couple pieces of merch to me that always meant the most, and I got them a little later into my fandom, but I had Undertaker merch from when he was the American Badass.
Okay.
And my dad got into wrestling with me for a little while, but then, you know, he was kind of in and out of it because he had a bad relationship with his dad growing up, who ignored his wrestling fandom, kind of ruined it for him. But my dad got super into the American Badass. My dad used to roll bikers.
Yeah.
So we would go to a wrestling show, and I just remember one night, I don't know if he was drunk or what it was, but he probably dropped like $300 on merchandise that night, and I got like my first set of collection of first-hand merchandise, which he got me the Undertaker license plate, Dead Man Ink. Okay. I got the hat, I got the hoodie, and I got the sweater, and then I got a couple Jeff Hardy t-shirts, Team Extreme shirts. But the main thing that I collected was the VHSs. And I remember getting a little bit older and going into like the music stores, right? You remember when they would sell the DVDs and such? And this was my, see, when I was a kid, I knew of ECW, WCW, and WWF. That was what I knew of.
Oh, yeah.
And then I went into a music store one time. And I had maybe like 30 bucks in my pocket, and I was like, oh, maybe I'll find like a cool WWE thing or something. And I saw some independent wrestling tapes. And oh my God, I bought these, and it was the first one I bought. I can't remember what it was, but it was one where ICP dubbed over it.
Okay, Stranglemania.
Stranglemania. I bought Stranglemania, and my mind was blown. I had never seen anything like indie wrestling, so immediately I caught that bug, and so I was trading tapes, and I had made a friend over in Japan via early AOL, and we decided, well, why don't we start sending each other cassettes? So we would mail each other these cassettes, and he would send me this Japanese wrestling, and I had no idea what the fucking commentators were saying, because I don't speak Japanese. So at that point, I had to invest in myself and like do the research, and that was the beauty of the early internet. Was nowadays, I feel like wrestling fans abuse the luxury of the internet, because all they want to do is talk shit. But back in the early days of AOL 4.0, you've got mail.
Yeah.
You know,
all we wanted was who has what New Japan, All Japan shows, and who are these guys?
Right, exactly. The who are these guys? That was my favorite part, because I was seeing people that I had never seen before, like Leatherface, man.
Yeah.
I'm still such a huge mark on Leatherface. Anytime he comes through, I'm just like, oh my God, I remember you were one of the first Japanese, you know, era, trade tape era guys that I'd ever seen. That I was like, oh my God, that's Leatherface from Texas Chainsaw. You can use that as a gimmick? And it was like this concept just switched on my head, like, oh my God, wrestling, you can be whoever you want to be. And it was just, man, I caught that early bug. And then getting into backyard wrestling, man, that just was like a trip. Because that, you know, I don't know if you realize this, but getting into backyard wrestling, especially the long-term era that I did, was complete accident and was never supposed to happen. Like,
yeah,
seriously.
All right, well, you know, as we don't condone it, because we both did it, you know,
right,
backyard
right.
wrestling, believe me, I'd probably still be working on the lower level Weekend Warrior Indies, definitely if I didn't start backyard wrestling when I was a kid, so we definitely can't condone it, you know.
Here's the thing that I think about the condoning of it, because, I mean, this is where I get a little bit on the controversial scale of things. Sean O'Hare, one time, he talked about backyard wrestling, you know, and he said, you know, if you're doing something that you love and you're not going out there trying to hurt people, do what the fuck you want to do. And, you know, I remember hearing that, but here's where I take a personal responsibility as a veteran of that era, the early 2000s era of backyard wrestling. I take a personal responsibility to tell the kids, if you're going to backyard wrestle, because you're going to do it whether or not I condone it or whether or not I say to do it or whether or not I warn you against it, the smart thing to do now is to tell them, hey, if you're going to do it smart. Don't go out there to break each other. Go out there and I feel that there's such a responsibility because, you know, as much as we talk about backyard wrestling being such a negative thing, it has some really positive things to it. I mean, not only the aggression of, you know, you're a young man and you're testosterone driven and, you know, you might go get into fights if you don't have that physical outlet, but backyard wrestling has doors that it can open if you're good. Like, I mean, there's a couple of our guys, I mean, as much as I may not like him on a personal level, but Rook Kelly, you know, like he made a professional wrestling career by starting in the yard and going and getting training and going further. And I'm sure there's a lot more guys like that. And I just feel like I don't condone what we did.
Yeah.
Which was kick the living shit out of each other.
We did it backwards. We kind of, after we all started getting hurt, that's when we all started figuring out how to, quote unquote, work. We did. I like to say we did it the old school way. We learned how to work because we wrestled when we were hurt.
Right, exactly. I mean, you know, there's been multiple injuries that I've gotten. And I wear those badges, you know, with pride, the scars and stuff with pride, because, you know, it, as much as it was stupid what we were doing, it was a lot of fucking fun. And it made some lifelong friendships. Like, I mean, I've honestly known you, Jesse, more than I've known most people that are left in my life at this point.
Straight up.
You know, I kind of hinted at the fact it was an accident that I got into backyard wrestling, but, you know, we had mentioned Burbs, Lauren Rupert, you know, we mentioned him earlier. He and I had our first backyard wrestling, well, my first backyard wrestling match over in this county. I mean, I'd done stuff when I was a kid on the reservation, in the gymnasium on the wrestling just, mats.
Yeah, you know, just, around.
First time we were really doing backyard wrestling, though, was it was just a trip to me, man. Like, we just kicked the shit out of each other for about 5 minutes, but then it just blew up. And then we actually had a family who had watched our tape that we'd done and say, hey, our kid's having his birthday, he's a wrestling fan, do you gotta come do a match? We'll pay you, we'll give you food, and we'll smoke you a bunch of weed. Well, teenage me says yes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're offering me free steak and you're offering me a free smoke out for coming and kicking the shit out of my friend. All right. But then he had joined this little company called SAW, and he called me up and said, hey, I'm about 2 blocks away from your girlfriend's house. Mind coming down and watch me? Like, oh, all right, I'll come down and watch you. I show up down there, and he brings me up to the booker at the time. He says, oh, hey, this is my brother. He's wrestling today. I'm like, no, I'm not. He goes, well, yeah, you are, and this is your match. So then at that point, you know, it was just game on from there. But, you know, but back to the point, though, I feel like there's a certain responsibility that we have, because, you know, you can tell all these kids backyard wrestling is a bad thing. You shouldn't do it. We had everybody telling us that. We had Jerry Springer episodes showing us, you know, we had all the fucking...
Oprah.
Yeah, exactly. The backyard wrestling craze, that's crazy. Yeah, well, we did it anyways. So the thing I try and tell the younger crowd nowadays is, well, if you're going to do it, take a couple time, you know, a couple moments to watch some podcasts, watch some wrestling, watch how the injuries happen and avoid that. Maybe listen to a few seminars. If you have the chance to attend a local seminar or a local training facility, do it.
Yeah.
Just take those opportunities. Don't hurt yourself. You don't have to. You are not going to get anywhere by stacking 6 tables and pouring thumbtacks and barbed wire and catching it on fire and going off a ladder and going through. You're not going to get anywhere.
No, you're
not. You're going to get a bunch of people on YouTube telling you what a dumbass you are and how you have no business being in a professional wrestling ring. But if you and your friends can go in the backyard and practice suplexing each other until you are able to reverse suplex each other into a reverse suplex, and if you are able to... you know, teach each other backflips and teach each other how to work. And if you were able to cohesively do that, I'll encourage backyard wrestling all day, every day. Because it is a healthy outlet. And it, as long as you're doing it smartly and you're not going out there just like Sean O'Hare said, if you're going out there and you're having fun, you're not going out there in the intentions to hurt anybody or maim anybody.
Yeah.
Do whatever makes your heart feel good, man. Because, you know, the Hardys, they started backyard wrestling. Shannon Moore, you know, Shane Helms, and, you know, CM Punk. Countless other guys started in these yards doing something. They built something that took care of them for life. So, I mean, we can't wholly say go do it, but at the same time, I'm going to be the dick that kind of says, well, if your heart's leaning into it.
Well, if you're not out there trying to be the next... Joey Janela or
CZW.
Yeah, CZW light tubes down. I will condone it unless you got yourself a ring and you go get some professional training. But then when you got that, try and get you some actual bookings. You know, like that to me is always one of the biggest things that, because I don't regret nothing in my life. I've had ups and downs, and I've realized, you know, regretting things in life, it's just baggage you don't need.
Yeah, I mean, so, when you regret your life, you're doing yourself a disservice.
Exactly.
The person you are today, and I'll say this, Jesse, I've known you a long time. Any of the old SAW fans or IPW fans who have known us long enough know we actually weren't always just the best of buddies. There was times where we wanted to beat the living shit out of each other, but at the end of the day, I have no regrets to where I am now. I have no regrets of what I did. You know, sometimes I think I might when I'm at work and my body, you know, doesn't want to cooperate the way it
might. Oh, believe me. I mean, you seen me last week looking like a bent 90-degree angle all for like 3 days. So, yeah, right. I feel you.
Right.
I feel you. But, you know, like I was saying, I don't regret backyard wrestling. You know, by the time we were able to, you know, make it to that smaller level and start get some actual training and getting bookings, you know, like, I used to get booked over on the other side of the state, and I'm still to this day very grateful to the company, you know, that did, and to my trainer, you know, JD Mason, you know.
Amen.
For the little bit, you know, I was able to take his learning and his training, you know, plus Chuck Payne and all them, you know.
Speaking of that whole crowd, I haven't seen them in a few years. I mean, you know, there was that brief time we worked together. But, I mean, if you guys are listening, especially J.D. Mason, especially J.B. Moonshine, and especially Chuck Payne, I have so much love for you guys still to this day, like, so much love for you guys. So, hey, you know what? Quick shout-out real quick to all three of those guys, man. And I appreciate all the times we spent together, and, like, there's a lot of love still here on this side of the fence for you guys. So, amen to you guys, and thank you for booking, Jesse. I appreciate that.
Well, I thank you for also, you know, giving them shout outs, you know, like, if it wasn't for those guys, you know, I'd probably would have just been one of them stupid backyarders. So at least for at least a couple years, thanks to them, I was able to feel what it was like to be a working professional. And, you know, my whole thing with the backyard now is because, you know, like I was saying, I don't regret it, but go out, find a wrestling school. I understand Lance Storms is closed, and,
right,
you know, most of our listeners are probably the Pacific Northwest. So, you know, my best bet would say, you know, hit up Evolve Fitness, you know, 321, and a couple other companies do
schools. You feel like you are schools. Talented, especially if you're around 16, 17 years old. Pursue that as soon as you can in a wrestling school, man, because not only with a wrestling school do you get the training to do it proper, but you actually get the right connections and everything, man. Like,
yes,
you know, I
definitely get your education. Definitely go out, get your education. Don't,
right,
you know, make sure you got something to fall back on, because there's a there's 100 million wrestlers in the world, and there's only 100 spots.
Right.
I'm, you know, that's exaggerating, but that's real life, you know.
Right, right. I feel that as far as, like, you know, some of our listeners know me, they know who I am. I was very blessed in the early days of our wrestling careers to also start pursuing a music career. And one thing, you know, you and I had talked about doing a podcast together, and I wanted to bring this up, man, is the parallels between the music industry and the wrestling industry, because I kind of went down the path of the music industry, you know, doing my thing as Sick Vicious, you know. But man, you would not believe the parallels. Well, you probably would believe, but the parallels between the music industry and the professional wrestling industry, it's all about paying those dues, you know. You have people that show up and think they're a megastar on their first event, and their first wrestling show, or their first music show. Don't want to stay to put chairs away. They don't want to stay to... Those dudes get laughed out of the building, you know. But you take that time. You put in those flyers. You put in that footwork. You sell those tickets. You build your resume. You just show after show after show until eventually you get noticed, man. And it's, you know, opportunities open. And I feel like anybody who's listening, especially the younger crowd, if you are a fan of either doing music or doing wrestling, one thing you need to keep in mind is you just have got to pay your dues. And that doesn't always mean, you know, polishing the knob of the guy who's the head of the locker room or the head of the show. But what it means is being willing to show up early, leave late, to listen, to help, to take any and every opportunity to better yourself and better your knowledge. And, I mean, that goes into every aspect of life, whether
exactly.
it be work or whether it be relationships. But when you have the ability to close your mouth, open your ears, and do the things that are asked of you, even if you don't want to, you get so much more out of life, I feel like.
Straight up. I've learned that in the last, I'd say, 5-6 years of my life. Definitely. A lot less resistance. You know, I see, you know, we're coming up on the hour here in a little bit. This one, we've already kind of talked about this a little bit, and you wanted to go in deep on reasons why. I know we'll, of course, we're going to do another one, I'm sure, because I know I'm going to have a panel discussion eventually. Just don't know on what yet. I like to ask, except for I forgot to ask last week, and I noticed it after the episode was over, my guest Tommy. I like to ask by ending the show each week, and by asking you what's your Mount Rushmore. Doesn't matter, past, present, live, dead, golden era to Gorgeous George or Ricochet, it don't matter. Who's your four that you would put on your Mount Rushmore?
Oh, man. So I'm going to go into a little breakdown of each one because people are going to get mad when they hear it. My number one in the entire world is Brock fucking Lesnar. And shout out to Justin Smith. I know he's one of the only other people that feels the same way as me. But Brock Lesnar is a once-in-a-lifetime not only athlete, but performer. And you will never see another professional wrestler that is quite like Brock Lesnar. I mean, the man is a two-time NCAA champion. And for those of you who don't know what that is collegiate wrestling. That is the actual wrestling. This man went well over 100 matches and won. Meaning he won well over 100 matches and lost one. This man knows how to wrestle. And now when he's not on his Suplex City gimmick and when he's actually putting in that work, the man is unreal. And for him to cross over into MMA and then come back, the man is a champion everywhere he goes. He's brought so much recognition to the sport. He's brought a sense of realism into the modern era of, I kind of stand on the same side as Orton about the flippy shit. I'm not about the flippy shit. I'm about working a limb, telling a story. Brock Lesnar will tell a story like none other because he is the Goliath to anybody else's David. You know, that is a dude that will beat some ass. And when you see him in the ring, you don't know if your favorite wrestler is going to come out all right. But, you know, when you see him lose, like he recently did to Rollins. I mean, people say Lesnar is selfish. I can understand why, you know. But if my job offered me, you know, millions of dollars to work 6-7 times a year, I'd take it.
Straight up.
So, number one is my Brock Lesnar. Number two, Ric fucking Flair, man. 16-time world champion on just the big scale champions that they want to acknowledge.
Yeah.
I mean, Ric Flair has done it all. He kind of gave our modern era that sense of, like, bigger than life, over the top, you know, jet flying, limousine riding. You know, he did those things. He did those things. And the fact that he would work those over an hour match multiple times on a weekend when he was coming up, it was a different era of wrestling, but it doesn't matter. He set a path for how to become a star, how to work your money, how to work, you know? And that's something that matters to me is how to be able to tell that story, you know? Now, if I'm going to go to another one, it's Mick fucking Foley. Because Mick Foley is that aspect of hardcore that we all needed growing up. He was the guy. And I mean, there's the Terry Funks. There's all the Japanese wrestlers. There's all the other people from all across the spectrum. So it's no disrespect to anybody else. But Mick Foley is the most recognizable face when it comes to hardcore wrestling. And that man gave so much of his body and his heart and his soul for this industry that, God, I couldn't thank him enough. There's no amount of thanks that any of us on this planet can give to that man for what he has done to his body, for what he did for his life. The depression that you know he had to have gone through, the pain he had to have gone through, and those moments, like the first time he won his WWF championship. Shivani fucked up, man. He fucked up. You know, you think that nobody's going to care that Mick Foley won the heavyweight championship of WWF? Like, oh my God. I remember watching that, and that's one of those other moments that made me cry, because it was just like, I relate to him. I'm not the biggest guy. I'm not the buffest guy. I'm not the best guy. But you know what? If you work hard enough, if you pay your dues enough,
it could pay off.
It can pay off. And last on my Rushmore, man, Andre the Giant. You know, in an era that saw Hogan coming up, Bret Hart coming up, there was only one real mythological being at that point in professional wrestling, and that's Andre the Giant. And the thing that I love the most about Andre is the story is not of him, you know, flipping cars or him just beating somebody's ass or him scaring somebody. The things about Andre the Giant that just put him on my Rushmore was his willingness to give back to the fans, his ability to connect with people. You know, little kids would look up to him and be comfortable approaching him and to show their appreciation. And he gave so much love and so much of his life. Man, I get teary-eyed, like, talk about Andre, because I just recently watched the HBO special, and it took me a long time to watch that. You know, I had to wait for it to come to one of my my networking streams.
Yeah.
But, you know, just hearing his story of being a young French boy, you know, working on the farm and becoming a professional wrestler, just front to back, his story was just one of the greatest. And to go, you know, 15 years, quote-unquote, undefeated, and to build that kind of a brand. He was the first, I think, real brand of the modern age of, you know, professional wrestling. At least one that you could respect. You know, Andre comes to your event, you're going to go. He comes to your city, you're going to go. Even if you don't watch professional wrestling, you just want to see the guy that they're billing at 8 feet tall.
And, the, you know, seventh wonder of the world.
Exactly. Yeah. And, I mean, you know, we could go for days on Mount Rushmore's. I got probably six other ones, but, you know, there's an honorary mention that I want to give, man. Not a lot of people like to give her love, but China. China was, she was something different, bro. Like, there was something to be said about the girl that could come in as an enforcer, that could have the match with the boys, that became an Intercontinental Champion, was in the Royal Rumble, you know. She broke that glass ceiling, and, you know, if I can't say that every aspect of her life was how I wanted it to be, especially as a young boy that looked up to her in a lot of ways. But,
yeah,
you know, my daughter is somebody that can look up to the fact of what China did in the professional wrestling industry. Fuck what anybody wants to bring up outside of it, but in the world of professional wrestling, she broke those glass ceilings of, you know, I can wrestle with the boys, and I can show up the boys. I can have a storyline with the boys. I can be an enforcer for the boys, you know, and When you're growing up and you have girls that you know that are professional wrestling fans, and they talk about, man, I want to grow up to be like China because she's somebody I can look up to. She's tough and she's scary, you know. So it's that part of me wants to give love for that. And I mean, there's a lot of people I could give love to. You know, my favorites, you know, they vary coming and going. Like Pentagon right now is one of my favorites. I was a John Moxley fan before AEW ever existed. You remember Jesse back in the day, me talking about this young cat, John Moxley. Moxley,
CZ Dub.
They're like, bro, you gotta see this. You gotta see this clip. This dude just got hit in the head with a fucking
Sawzall.
Yeah, Sawzall, bro. Like, oh my God. And everybody, Mark, calm down. That guy's never gonna make it. But he did. You know, there's a lot of people I look up to, but the GOAT to me is always Piper. You know, I explained that earlier in this podcast why. But, you know, and I got to give a lot of love for Dan Revita. He's got to be, in my opinion, the best backyard wrestler that ever existed. Because it didn't matter. People looked up to him. And, you know, that might be a goofy honorary title to have, but as far as backyard wrestling was concerned, I'm always going to be a Mark for the Renegade. And that's not just because I'm Mark and I used to manage the Renegade, but it's just because, you know, there was something about Dan, and I think you know it too, and we all know it.
Oh, like, yeah.
You couldn't help but just relate to the awkward dude that just was there to kick some ass, but then you couldn't really get an interview, and that's where I had to step in, because he wasn't comfortable talking to people. He just wanted to go home, and he just wanted to be with his family, and he just wanted to be with his friends. He just wanted to live a quiet life. So, you know, our company gave him the loudest, most obnoxious manager that they could. But at the end of the day, every day, all he wanted to do at the end of every match was just go home, be around his people, and eat a spaghetti dinner. And how fucking much more could you look up to somebody than that?
Straight up. Straight up. Before we go, this show's airing on, you know, today's date is September 7th, so, you know, you got a show coming up.
Yes.
Here, a good friend of ours, birthday show, RIP, I'll let you plug it.
All right, man. So it's September 29th at the Pin, Spokane, Washington. You got to know it. If you're going to be there, you're going to be there. We're doing Victor Norman's 30th birthday. This motherfucker died at the age 19 years old, and we're about to have his 30th birthday celebration. His older brother Mike Norman's hosting the show and performing. Neil Montgomery's putting the show on. I'll be performing a Sick Vicious. Tickets are $5. You can contact me. I'm going to leave my email. It's sickvicious, S-I-C, vicious, official, all one word, at gmail.com. If you're a fan listening to this, you want to attend, you know, email me. We'll link up for tickets. We'll do what we got to do. I'm in the process right now of making a new theme song for Chief Atakula Kula. And you know what, fans, why don't you guys just leave a comment? And if you guys leave enough comments, I guarantee you Jesse Lawson, a.k.a. Madman, will be at Victor Norman's birthday show, as long as you leave enough comments that you want to be there to party with him, whether or not he has work. I don't give a fuck. So you guys leave the comments. You guys make it happen. Let's all make a big party for our homeboy. Let's have fun that night. So, you know, Jesse, I appreciate you so much having me come on this show. And hashtag absolutely. You know who the fuck I am. Just hit me up. Let's do another episode again soon, man. I'm all about
definitely,
it.
Definitely.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I appreciate the fuck out of it.
Mark, thank you for being on the show this week. Wrestling Fandom Podcast listeners, yet another week. I'm back to it. Ain't missing a week. We got a couple more next week. I'll probably actually, you know, since it's the 7th, be on the lookout for the first episode of NXT coming out next week on USA Network. I'll probably throw out a review for it. Please make sure you go back, listen, subscribe, and like the podcast. Go back and listen to the archives, the AEW double all out review, you know, go back and listen to it all. And thank you guys for your love and your support. Make sure you check out the Teespring stores. Helps me put money back into the podcast, get new computers, new mics, you know, hook it up. Much love, and thank you very much for listening and supporting. See you next week. Hey, Wrestling Fandom Podcast listeners. Do you like the show? Would you like to help support the show? Then please go over to our T-Shirt Springs stores at tshirtsprings.com/stores/wrestling-fandom-pod. And please pick up a t-shirt, a sticker, and support the show. Thank you.